other.
Ryan.
Gently.
Master.
Darkness, pierced by the needlepoint of a slim silver dagger. Noises soft and muffled, like the distant beating of a slack-skinned drum. Movement, pitching and regular, like being in some giant's cradle. The smell, cramping and sickly, overlaid with the unmistakable stench of death and the sea. Consciousness was slowly coming back to Ryan Cotter. The dream seemed to have lasted for all of a dismal, bleak eternity. Swaying, pitching dreams that carried Ryan across gray mountain passes where his breath smoked like fire, through featureless swamps of turgid brown water, broken only by the gnarled roots of dead trees. Ryan had fallen by the wayside, and he had watched a parade of the hopeless and damned file past him, with scarcely a glance in his direction. There had been a tall man in black, white-collared, riding a great raw-boned stallion whose head was a fiery-eyed skull. A pair of women, both of them slender and barefoot, swayed along the center of the dreary highway through a steady fall of drizzle. A child, with golden hair and the sweetest smile, was herding along a flock of bedraggled sheep, aided by two slavering hounds. If any of the bleeding creatures attempted to delay or go to the side of the track and nibble the rank grasses, the dogs would pounce on them, rip open their bellies, and claw out greasy loops of intestines, letting them dangle in the dust. And all the time, the little boy smiled innocently and whistled a merry tune.
Ryan, you.
Two ragged men sitting on a slope were both staring at Ryan as he swayed with exhaustion. They were in the shade of a stump of a tree bearing only a handful of curling leaves. One of the men had his boots unlaced, and the other was nibbling on the end of a scrawny carrot. Eventually, they looked away from him and carried on with their own waiting.
Come on, Ryan.
Wake up.
Come on.
Open your eyes, brother.
In his shuddering nightmare, Ryan was running along a darkened corridor in an old castle. Rotting tapestries hid gaping holes in the walls, which were covered in a shimmering veil of iridescent beetles. Behind him, Ryan could hear the murmur of voices and the pounding of boots on stone flags. The tapestries blew across the passage in front of him, and he had to run through them, wincing as they slapped at his face.
Ryan, by his son, giver of all life, wake up! If I slap you any harder, my hand will fall off the end of my arm.
Slowly and painfully, Ryan eased open his right eye. The pain was so severe that he closed it again. Fighting against the desire to throw up, he drew in several deep, slow breaths, his head swimming. After a few moments, he tried again, squinting around him. He could see the mantis figure of Donphil crouched at his side. They were in a small room, no larger than a broom closet, with chinks of light peeking through slits around a door in the ceiling. Ryan's brain was still utterly befuddled.
Why is the door in the ceiling?
He became aware that his throat was painfully dry, and his voice was feeble.
Come on, Ryan.
No. Why is the door... And why are we moving? And what's that smell like tar and fish? The creek... Oh, fire blast. Now I know. I can remember it all, Donphil. That fucking bastard Rodriguez!
The side of his head came smartly into contact with a protruding oaken beam. Donphil leaned back, folding his legs under him.
Yeah, we're at sea. The Redscum sold us out.
Yeah. Who? You don't think...
Ryan got the answer to his incomplete question.
Captain Piraquad.
The Indian had only come around himself a handful of minutes before Ryan, so neither of them had any idea how long they'd been prisoners aboard the Salvation. Both of them felt appallingly sick, a condition not helped by the cramped, stuffy locker where they were being held and the tossing of the vessel. Ryan knew little about the ocean, but it seemed as though the ship were breasting long rollers rather than the choppy short waves encountered near the coast.
What about the others?
They didn't drink anything, remember?
If you'd gone up with them, then you'd have been safe too. It was me the old gaudy bitch wanted, not you.
Unless she wanted me for my skill with the whaling spear. I think one of her crew was there at the competition and saw me.
Likely the others have been thrown out of the vill by now, or set to forced slave work. Doubt they'll have been harmed.
No. You reckon she'll chill us?
Ryan nodded.
Do stickies love fires? She'll maybe work me first. No place to run on a ship, is there?
No, not much hope in fighting. Must be 20 or more men riding here.
Just keep quiet and do like we're told. That's about the best plan I can think of right now.
Locked away, Ryan was forced to take stock of his situation and to try to find what hopes there might be for himself and his companion. There wasn't much on the plus side. They'd both been stripped of their own clothes and roughly dressed in thick cotton breeches and dark blue woolen sweaters. Because of Donphil's inordinate height, his pants barely reached his knees, and the sleeves of his sweater finished just below his elbows. Both men were barefoot, and both had been relieved of their weapons. There were coils of rope in the locker, stowed neatly away, and several small anchors, but nothing that could conceivably be used to fight with. Ryan felt his way around the darkness on the off chance that someone might have dropped a knife, but there was nothing of any use. And every rope he touched felt slimy and slippery, from the whale oil that Doc had been talking about, he guessed.
There's no point, Ryan. It's the way of my people to make the best of what is, and not to weep over what is not. We're trapped. If they want to chill us, then they'll chill us. We can maybe take a couple with us to the Shadowland beyond, but they might not chill us. So we'll live.
Ryan couldn't think of a smart answer, so he crawled to his corner and sat huddled on a coil of thick rope. Every now and again, a wave of the drug would come surging up in his throat, like an extra high wave on a sloping beach, and it would suck him back into the dimness of half-sleep. As Donphil had said, there was little point in trying to speculate on what might happen to them in the next few hours. When it happened, then it would happen. The only thing that worried him at all was what might have happened at the Rising Flukes, once he and the Apache had failed to join the others. It was Christie who'd found out that life had dealt a hand filled with spades and clubs. While waiting in the bedroom, watching condensation trickling down the cold panes of glass, she'd begun to worry about Ryan and the Indian taking so long in their private word with the landlord. Like many people in the Deathlands, Christie carried Mutey blood in her. One of the effects of this was that she could sense certain things, see the future in a limited way, sometimes be aware of the presence of good and evil. She'd rolled over on her side and sat, still fully clothed, waiting for them to begin their planned escape. She could see J.B. sitting cross-legged on his own bed, staring at her.
I'm thinking.
Yeah, I reckon I heard men moving in the alley. You see anything?
Christie closed her eyes.
I felt real bad down in that drinker there. Men by the door were waiting for... And Rodriguez was nearly shitting his pretty tight trousers, only... Oh, Gaia. I can see it now. Come on!
But by the time she'd reached the top of the stairs, weapon in her hand, it was all over. The bar was filled with SEC men, all armed, muzzles of rifles and scatter guns pinning her in place. Rodriguez was behind the bar, wiping sweat from his face. Ryan's weapons and white silk scarf were on the bar, as were Donphil Smith & Wesson distinguished Combat 357 Magnum and mirrored sunglasses. Both men were gone.
Don't move, Outlander. We've got you covered.
The voice came from the SEC man who'd first stopped them on the road into Claggartville.
Thou and thy friends had best come down and leave us your blasters. Then ye can all go back to your own quarters until morning. Nobody will harm ye.